If you'll turn your Bibles to Acts chapter 27, we are still wrapping up the end of this sermon series, To the Ends of the Earth. We saw a while ago the beginning of the church at Pentecost and what God did through the disciples early on. And then we took a little bit of a break and we've come back to Acts to see what is really about missions, about spreading the good news away from Jerusalem and to every bit of this earth that God made, because God wants all people to hear the good news of what he did with his son, Jesus. And so now we're in Acts chapter 27. We'll get into Acts chapter 28 a little bit today as well, which means we're getting very close to the end. So what that means is next week, while I'm gone, Pastor Michael will be finishing up Acts chapter 28. So then the next week, we will be having a Q&A time. So please submit questions. Otherwise, we will ask the questions, and you guys get to give the answers. So the more questions you give us, the less you have to answer, okay? And the more we have to answer. So any question that you have as it relates to, you can include all of the book of Acts. It doesn't have to be just the missionary part of it. It can be about missions. It can be about different strategies and missions. Anything that you thought of as you were trying to learn from the book of Acts, a question that you might have, or something that you didn't think we taught clearly enough that you'd like us to say again, so that we can make sure we are all on the same page as it relates to what God is trying to teach us in the book of Acts. Don't be afraid to ask detailed questions, because I know as we've been speaking, we've been going over large portions and mainly to follow the narrative. If you have a question about a particular place, feel free to ask it. We will do anything that we have to study up on that and give you the best answer that we can. So today in Acts chapter 27, we see Paul finally leaving Caesarea. He's been there for a good couple years, 2-3 years, under house arrest, kind of. Like, he's staying at the governor's house. He can't leave, but like anybody he wants can come see him, and he gets to have banquets with the governor all the time. A new official gets replaces Felix. His name is Festus. He wants to make the Jews on his side, as do most Roman officials in that area, because the Jewish people are known for protesting and throwing riots and trying to rebel, so they wanted to make sure they were on their good side. But during the case, Paul says, I don't want to go back to Jerusalem, because if I go back to Jerusalem, they're going to kill me before I even make it to Jerusalem. So if you're not going to decide my case here, I want to go to see Caesar, which is something he was allowed to do as a Roman citizen. So, effectively, Paul just gets a free trip to Rome. Now, if you remember in our study in the book of Romans, how Paul says that he wants to come see the church in Rome, if at all possible, and he wrote that on his way back to Jerusalem, not knowing for sure if he was going to make it out alive. But now that Paul's been sitting in Caesarea for 3 years, he's like, this is the perfect time for me to get an all-expenses-paid trip to Rome. However, as we read this chapter, we realize it wasn't a very good cruise over to Rome. But Paul, trusting God's timing and his will as to where he would want Paul to be, decided to appeal to Caesar. And unfortunately, a higher ranking a Roman official shows up and kind of tells Festus, well, he could have just been let go, but he's already appealed to Caesar, so now he's got to go to Rome. So it really works out in Paul's favor. He doesn't have to figure out how to make it to Rome, because the Roman government is going to do it for him. So we read in the first couple of verses of Acts chapter 27 a whole bunch of different places, and I'm sure none of us know anything about these places except for maybe Cyprus, because it's been mentioned quite a bit. So we're going to throw this map up onto the screen. All right, so you see at the bottom down here, but the laser's not working either. So down at the bottom, here Paul leaves Caesarea. They go up to a port city. They go up and over Cyprus, and they end up landing in Lycia. Then they go to another city. They go down and land in Crete. And Luke is just saying the whole time, this sailing business wasn't going so great. Eventually, they find a bigger ship, which you would think would help them on rough seas to go, and so they went down to Crete, and they eventually make it to the middle of the map, where it says Fair Havens. Although this was a really good port, they decided that they couldn't stay there for the winter. due to the weather, due to what infrastructure they had there, it was really hard for a vessel that big to stay there for a couple months while they waited out the season. And Paul told everybody, if we go now, there's a very good chance you're going to lose all the cargo, which is what that ship was for, was to take grain and sell it. And you're going to lose all of your cargo, and there's a good chance people are going to die if we decide to leave now. We should stay here. So if you were in the position of the centurion, Julius, would you have listened to Paul? I mean, it's easy for us because we kind of know Paul, right? And we know a whole bunch of stuff that Julius doesn't know. What is Paul right now? He's a prisoner of the Roman Empire. And where is he going? To Rome. To do what? Plead his case before Caesar. There's a whole bunch of other prisoners on board, too. Do you think any of the other prisoners are like, yeah, listen to Paul, we don't want to go to Rome? Right? It just kind of seems like a stall tactic, really. If you don't know everything that we know from the book of Acts, you would just think Paul was finally nervous about going to Rome and being before Caesar and worried that he's going to get executed. And so they don't pay much attention to what Paul says because he's just trying to make people afraid to leave so that they can stay in Crete for a while. However, what you do see in this passage is Julius treating Paul nicely. In fact, at one of these cities, he lets him go. He's a prisoner of the Roman Empire. He just lets him go. He says, you'll come back, right? Sure. And so he goes and he visits with the people in the churches that he's planted in the years before up in this area. And then he makes it back, and they decide, as a majority, they decide we're going to leave Fair Havens. And what we're going to try and do is make it to just the other side of Crete. So this is where they're trying to get. Trying to get to Phoenix, and that's where they're going to stay for the winter until the seas calm down, and they think they can make it there in a couple days or so, and then they'll just stay put, and then they'll go up to Rome. However, that's not how their trip goes. They listen to the captain of the ship, the owner of the boat, and they say, yeah, we can make it. The ship's fine. We can travel through this, no problem. I've never been interested in being a boat captain whatsoever. So I feel like I shouldn't judge boat captains, but boat captains often think they can sail through things that they can't, like icebergs. Most of the stories of people sailing through rough waters end poorly, right? So they should have known that this was risky, but I can also see from particularly a male perspective, like you're just going from one middle, you're halfway there from the middle of the island to another port. All you got to do is just make an easy right hand turn, no problem. So they decide to leave. And that's where we'll pick up in verse 13. It says, when a gentle south wind sprang up, they thought they had achieved their purpose. So they had decided they wanted to leave. A nice easy breeze comes up and they say, great, this is perfect. Let's take that one. We'll go. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete, which is, you know, just a little, you can keep the island on your side the whole time and just follow it. However, not long after they left, a fierce wind called the Northeaster rushed down from the island. Since the ship was caught and was unable to head into the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. After running under the shelter of a little island called Kada, we were barely able to get control of the skiff. After hoisting it up, they used ropes and tackle and girded the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtis, they lowered the drift anchor, and in this way they were driven along. Because we were being severely battered by the storm, they began to jettison the cargo the next day. On the third day, they threw the ship's gear overboard with their own hands. For many days, neither sun or stars appeared, and the severe storm kept raging. Finally, all hope that we would be saved was disappearing. Since many were going without food, Paul stood up among them and said, You men should have followed my advice not to sail from Crete and sustain this damage and loss. Now I urge you to take courage, because there will be no loss of any of your lives, but only of the ship. For this night, an angel of the God I belong to and serve stood by me. And he said, don't be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And look, God has graciously given you all those who are sailing with you. Therefore, take courage, men, because I believe God that it will be just the way it was told to me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. So this is way worse than a three-hour tour going wrong, right? They're out there for 3 days, blowing around. There's no sun, no stars. They can't navigate. And even if they could navigate, they can't control the ship at all. They manage to not run straight into an island and get around it. Then they're worried that they're going to hit into another place, so that they drop anchor so that if they get too close to something, it will grab, and then the boat will just kind of flail back and forth. They're panicking that they won't be able to keep the boat above water, so they start throwing cargo off. And they start ditching everything. They drop things under the boat to try and tie the boat together. Like, this is like classic, like, five-year-old trying to hide the fact that they broke something. Like, just try to duct tape it real quick. We'll be fine. And they start panicking. And then in the middle of this all, Paul just stands up and says, told you. You guys should have listened. But don't worry about it, because God has told me what's going to happen. And no one's going to die. Don't panic. You're just going to lose your ship. Now, that's bad, but it's better than everyone dying. And so he says, what's going to happen is we're going to run it into a certain island, and we will be okay. So, verse 27, I just love how Luke writes. He doesn't ever give any sort of like hints, and then he just like skips. So last thing we knew is like on the third day, They were starting to throw stuff off, and then the sun hadn't come up for many days. And then verse 27, then the 14th night came, 2 weeks, completely lost. Now, it could be worse. I mean, this is the Mediterranean Sea. They could have been out in the ocean, but for all they know, they are out in the ocean. But when the 14th night came, we were drifting in the Adriatic Sea, and in the middle of the night, the sailors thought they were approaching land. So they took a sounding and found it to be 120 feet deep. So they measure how far down it is to hit ground, and they find it's 120 feet. And then when we had sailed a little further, they sounded again. They found it to be 90 feet. So they know they're getting closer and closer to something. Then, fearing we might run aground in some rocky place, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight to come. Some sailors tried to escape from the ship. They had let down the skiff into the sea, pretending that they were going to put out anchors from the bow. Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut the ropes holding the skiff and let it drop away. Again, after 2 weeks being completely drifting everywhere, for some of the guys that know things about boats to be panicking and being like, let's get on the lifeboat, let's get out of here, is reasonable. However, Paul knows what they're doing. They've dropped the anchors off of the one side of their boat, and they're pretending like they're going to go drop anchors off the other side, and they're going to just completely leave the big boat alone. And so Paul tells the centurion, who's not a sailor, right? He tells him that these sailors have to stay on the boat, otherwise none of us have a chance of making it. These are the guys that know how to control a ship like this. You don't just have these guys ditch and figure out how to drive this big ship through the water. So the soldiers will find out that that's what they're doing. They go cut the boat off so they can't leave. Verse 33, when it was about daylight, Paul urged them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day, and you have been waiting and going without food, having eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for this has to do with your survival, since none of you will lose a hair from your head. After he said these things and had taken some bread, he gave thanks to God in the presence of all of them, and when he broke it, he began to eat. They all became encouraged and took food themselves. And also, in classic Luke style, no idea how many people are on the boat. Verse 37, in all, there were 276 of us on the ship. When they had eaten enough, they began to lighten the load by throwing the grain overboard into the sea. 276 people on the ship. And Paul says, yeah, none of us are going to die. Just listen up and follow what I'm going to have you guys do. We're going to make it all safe onto this island. All 276. What are the odds of all 276 people being lost in sea for 2 weeks, having not already died, but then not dying when the ship completely wrecks? Paul is completely confident. He has them eat breakfast. He prays to God. And this whole time, Paul is saying, the God that I worship, he's bigger than this storm. He's bigger than this problem that we're facing. And so I'm taking confidence in him that this is going to be okay. Now, do we know of anyone other than probably Luke on this? Well, it says they, so Luke might not even be there, but anyone else on this ship, a believer? We're not told that anyone else is. So Paul, as a prisoner going to Rome, is what is he not doing? He's not being afraid, and he's sharing the gospel about the God that he worships. So, verse 39. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but sighted a bay with a beach. They planned to run the ship ashore if they could. After casting off the anchors, they left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and headed for the beach. But they struck a sandbar and ran the ship aground. The bows jammed fast and remained immovable, while the stern began to break up by the pounding of the waves. So they finally saw an island with a beach. So there's not a bunch of rocks around, so that they're like, oh, great. It's like a parking spot for our ship. Let's just run it right in. As they're going in, an unexpected sandbar gets them stuck. It won't move, and then the part of the ship starts to break off. So, verse 42, the Roman soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners so that no one could swim away and escape. But the centurion kept them from carrying out their plan because he wanted to save Paul. So he ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to follow, some on planks and some on debris from the ship. In this way, everyone safely reached the shore. The soldiers, knowing that, okay, we can survive this, but if we make it to Rome and we don't have all of our prisoners that we were supposed to have, we're going to die. Let's just kill all of them so we don't have to worry about that, and then we can take care of ourselves. So that's what they were going to do. All of the prisoners that were, and we don't know how many of the 276 were prisoners, but they were just going to start killing people so that they wouldn't swim away and run away. But the centurion, who had treated Paul kindly and who liked Paul because he didn't want Paul to die, said, we're not going to do that. This is what we're going to do. Anyone that knows how to swim, jump off, go swimming. Obviously, you can't swim well in shackles. So they had to trust that these prisoners weren't just going to swim, make it to land first, and completely run away. But that's what he ordered them to do. So anyone that can swim, get over and start swimming. Everybody else, find a broken part of the ship and kick your way to shore. And all 276 people on the boat make it. Now, the problem is they still have no idea where they are. they had no idea what this island was. It was a small island with a very small beach that they tried to land on. And so you can see how poorly this trip went. They started in the middle of this map, and they were supposed to be going next door to Phoenix, and instead they drift way over there to this tiny dot called Malta. Which, surprisingly, is a lot closer to Italy than you would have expected after 2 weeks of being completely lost at sea. They did a pretty good job of navigating to at least get closer to Rome and not be crashed into Africa or sent backwards. I don't think that was an accident. I think God, completely in control of the storm, knew exactly where he was going to put that boat. God has a habit of putting boats where he wants them. He sent Jonah. Jonah tried to run away, got sent on a boat, running away the opposite direction. God sends a storm. They throw Jonah over, gets swallowed by a fish. The fish then takes Jonah where he's supposed to go. Noah was to build a really big ship and keep animals and his family alive. And they drifted over the water, over the earth, for over a year. And God just drops the boat where he wants it. And God's completely in control of this situation, and he takes Paul close to Rome in a way that the sailors had no way of doing. And everybody on that boat shows up safe. So now that they've landed, we're going to get into chapter 28 a little bit. Once ashore, we then learned that the island was called Malta. The local people showed us extraordinary kindness, for they lit a fire and took us all in since it was raining and cold. So not only was the boat smashing to pieces and things, but it was also raining, and they were trying to swim to this island. And the islanders see the people coming, so they light a fire to keep them warm. So as Paul was gathering a bundle of brushwood to put on the fire, a viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself to his hand. Could things get much worse, right? All 276 people make it ashore, right? No problem. Everyone swam, no one drowned. They're lighting a fire to get warm and dry out. And Paul's doing his part to help, brings a bundle of fire, puts it on a bundle of firewood, puts it on the fire, and then a snake comes out and grabs onto his arm and doesn't let go. When the local people saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another, "This man is probably a murderer, and though he has escaped the sea, justice does not allow him to live." These islanders knew what kind of snake that was and knew he was going to die. These islanders are still of a religious background that's more pagan, more worshiping of nature and just forces in general. And so they say, although he managed to escape the sea, so there probably is a god of the sea, justice, how the world operates, won't let him live because the snake just bites him. Verse 5, however, he shook the creature off into the fire. He just throws the snake into the fire, and he suffered no harm. They expected that he would swell up or suddenly drop dead, but after they waited a long time and saw nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and said he was a god. So in a couple hours, they went from saying, well, Paul must be guilty of murder because the snake is biting him after he makes it out of the sea. Nothing happens to Paul, so they're like, oh, so this guy must be a god then to not die. Where else have we seen Paul being told that he was a god? On some of his other cities. They came to worship Paul and Barnabas, that bring animals to sacrifice to them because of what they had done by healing people. And Paul and Barnabas said, no, 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 we're just men. We're just men like you, but our God is the God of the entire world. Verse 7, now in the area around that place was an estate belonging to the leading man of the island named Publius, who welcomed us and entertained us hospitably for 3 days. So there is a Roman official on this small island that probably was rather insignificant, although it would be pretty cool to be in charge of an island, right? So he's there, and not too far away from the beach, which would be a good place to put your governor's house if you lived on an island, is this guy's house. And he welcomes all 276 people that just shipwrecked onto his island and hosts them, knowing that this was the case. It was Romans traveling on a ship to take people to Caesar. While they were there, they find out that his father was in bed suffering from fever and dysentery. And Paul went to him, and praying and laying his hands on him, he healed him. Paul doesn't miss a beat. Completely shipwrecked, bit by a viper. It's fine. I'll go to the Roman official's house and I'll heal his father. It's fine. So after this, after he heals Publius's dad, the rest of those on the island who had diseases also came and were cured. So they heaped many honors on us, and when we sailed, they gave us what we needed. Paul follows his normal plan, even when he's completely shipwrecked, not planning to be there. He shows up, and since there's no synagogue, he just kind of goes about his normal routine, which is to just go talk to everyone and anyone. He finds out who the Roman official is. He goes and he tells him about God. He starts healing people. All over this island, people are like, wait, there's someone here that can heal us of our diseases? This is fantastic. Paul begins something on this island here that had never made it to this island before. A faith in God. Now, this Roman official may have heard about God before he got stationed onto this island, but these islanders never been exposed to the truth of who God was. And what happens? God shipwrecks Paul onto this island to tell people about God. We often ask the rhetorical question, what about this guy who's stuck on an island who hasn't ever heard about God before? Can he still get to heaven? Well, sure, if God shipwrecks somebody there. I would argue this is what God does. He teleported Philip to go talk to an Ethiopian traveling on a desert road because he was seeking God. So God drops off one of his servants there to teach him about Jesus. And then teleports Philip back. A group of people on an island who worship the sea, who worship the nature, who worship invisible forces. God says, all right, I want my message of my son there. I'm going to shipwreck Paul onto the island. I'm going to have him get bit by a poisonous snake, and I'm going to let him heal people of their diseases. Because I want the gospel there. This small, insignificant island probably didn't have all that many people on it. Yet God went out of his way, so to speak. Malta wasn't on their travel agenda to get to Rome, to spread the gospel there. And if you look up on Malta's website and stuff, and you ask about their religion and things, it says that, yes, this is how Christianity made it to Malta. Paul got shipwrecked. There was a guy named Publius. He stayed with Publius. Legend has it, he heals his dad. This is when Malta turned Christian. Or first was exposed to Christianity. They say that there's drawings everywhere of Paul with a snake hanging off of his hand. This isn't just a nice story. This is truth. That God went out of his way to bring the gospel to this small island where people would believe in his son, Jesus. So, when time came, they decided to leave. After 3 months, we set sail in an Alexandrian ship that had wintered at the island with the twin brothers as its figurehead. Putting in at Syracuse, we stayed 3 days. From there, after making a circuit along the coast, we reached Rhegium. After 1 day, a south wind sprang up, and the second day we came to Pteleo. There we found believers and were invited to stay with them for 7 days. And so we came to Rome. You can see the path from Malta up to Rome. God had told Paul a couple chapters ago, you have to testify in Rome just like you testified in Jerusalem. And that gave Paul the confidence to not to panic for the 3 years he was locked up, not knowing who was going to try and kill him next, not panicking while he gets shipwrecked onto this tiny island. But Paul, in his confidence in God, knew that this was part of God's plan. That is where our text will end today. And as has been what we've been doing in the last couple chapters, there's only really a couple things to take as a way of application for us. First of all, as with all of Acts, we should marvel at the ability and sovereignty of God and what his plan is. Although this crashing on the Malta should be written down as a boating mistake, it was not a mistake. God had it planned out from when the wind was going to show up, which way it was going to show up. When the sailors tried to anchor, he knew what to do to make it still go forward. He managed to crash the ship into a sandbar. He managed to allow people that knew how to swim, and break off enough of the ship so that people who couldn't swim could make it to shore. He was in control of it all from the very beginning. Although Paul had warned them at Crete, we shouldn't go because this isn't going to go well. God still made it possible for all 276 of those people to crash into an island and be alive and bear witness to the gospel. Paul was undoubtedly witnessing to the 276 people on board. And he is then telling them, my God is bigger than this problem that we're having where you guys can't control your boat. And if you listen, all 276 of us are going to stay alive. You crash. I would think that many of the people on the boat would be like, wow, Paul's never been a sailor in his life, and somehow we made it here. And then he gets to the island, he starts healing people all over the island and telling them about God. So as with most of the narratives in Acts, we should marvel at the fact that God is sovereign and completely in control of every aspect of our life. So as we think about that, risking spiritualizing the text too much, when things don't go well for us, God is in control and he has a plan. And for whatever reason, that struggle that's happening in your life is there for a purpose, put there by God. So I don't want to go too far into saying all the storms in your life and all of this stuff, but that is a principle that we can learn from this text. This trip on this boat for 2 weeks would have been nothing that anyone on that boat would have asked for. And yet God used it to take them exactly where he wanted them to be. So, when something happens in your life and it's really unenjoyable, on the face value, it is a problem and bad and disastrous. Have the courage, like Paul had the courage, to trust in God and ask the question, okay, now what? Why am I here? Because that's what Paul did. He said, well, since I'm on a boat in the middle of this storm for 2 weeks, God must have a plan. God sends a messenger and says, this is my plan. I'm going to shipwreck you on an island. Paul says, okay. And then when he gets to the island, he says, now what? What am I going to do? And he spreads the gospel. It wouldn't be surprising to me if when things go wrong in your life, whether it be a simple thing like a flat tire or something even more disastrous like losing someone you love, is that those disasters in your life are there so that you have an opportunity to share the gospel with someone who wouldn't listen otherwise. Paul shows up on an island filled with pagan islanders. And because of what God has done through that journey and what God is doing through Paul, because Paul wasn't sitting down moping and being like, I'm cold and wet, that God used him to spread the gospel. And I would expect the same thing of the God that we worship today. So next time you find yourself stranded somewhere or going through a difficult situation, ask yourself, why am I here? And be aware of people who are around you who are unbelievers that need to know the gospel, or believers who are struggling who need encouraging. You don't end up somewhere on accident. Paul didn't end up on Malta by accident. God made it happen. Now, the other thing that we can learn from this passage is that people don't always listen. Paul, all along the way, is saying, guys, you know this is the worst time of year to sail. Why are we getting on a boat in the middle of winter when the storms are unpredictable? They didn't listen to Paul. And undoubtedly, many people that he witnessed to on the boat and on Malta also did not listen to Paul. There will be people with hard hearts wherever you go. No matter how well you present the gospel, there will be people who just are so opposed to the idea of God calling them a sinner, but then providing them a way of salvation. And that is totally understandable to me, that there are people that are so opposed to admitting the fact that I've made mistakes, but this God says that he can fix those. I'm in. But there will be people in your life, many of them whom you know well, some of them in your families, that will not listen. But that doesn't give us an excuse to stop witnessing, to stop telling them about what God is doing for us. Paul was never deeply discouraged by the fact that people didn't listen to him. He just kept moving. And now we've made it so that Paul has made it all the way to Rome, which has been his goal for like the last 5 years. He makes it to Rome, just like God said he would, to testify before Caesar. That's where Pastor Michael will pick up next week. Dear Father, thank you for this journey that you sent Paul on, to send him with a group of people who started out by not listening to him, even though he made sense. We thank you that you sent wind and waves to take him to Malta, to show that you care about even the small places in this world as the gospel continues to spread from Jerusalem to the ends of the earth. We praise you that you are a God who is completely in control, that you are able to do whatever you want. We pray that as we face times in our lives, situations that are unfavorable, that we would take courage in the fact that you are in control, that you have a plan, and that we are where we are for a purpose. Please use your spirit to help us know that purpose, to be willing to be humble and to be selfless, to care about others around us more than we care about the inconveniences in our life. We ask this in your son's name. Amen.